All right, welcome back to the Tom and Curly Show. Jack Stein, Sherry Elicker sitting in for Mr. Tom and Mr. Curly. Jacob, producer extraordinaire, also a person who likes to dump his waste into rivers. Brady Bones is the producer that we have. And Sherry Elicker, you've been in the news business slightly longer than I have, because I know that when we were talking about this earlier, I'm going to be 34 in like 2 weeks. You just turned 38. So you've just been in the news business just a hair longer than I have.
Right.
Have you noticed kind of a theme, if you will, about which kind of stories get picked up and which kind of stories do not get picked up to the national level?
Well, if you're referring to crime stories, yes, absolutely. There is a real tendency on the part of the news media to cover attractive people. So a lot of times you'll find, stories about missing women or murder suspects or things like that. And generally speaking, they are usually attractive young women. That has been one of the concerns about people who say that there's discrimination when it comes to those kinds of stories, because people of color are not equally represented in terms of media coverage when it comes to those kinds of crime. If you'll think back when crime was sort of a thing that everybody was talking about and court TV was in its heyday and Nancy Grace was on, it seemed like every week there was another story about an attractive young woman either going missing or found dead and her husband was the prime suspect. But rarely did you see anybody that was, say, over 50 or a person of color wasn't focused on a lot of these prime time shows. So that tends to be the trend.
I wonder if we could get Nancy Grace on the line. Jacob, get me Nancy Grace, because I feel like she would be the person,
right,
to really break down this kind of story. So there's a young woman. Her name is Gabby Petito, and she has been missing for some time. And I just saw this today, Sherry Elicker. It popped up in my morning news feed. It says father speaks out claiming that the boyfriend brought Brian Laundry, just basically begging him to talk to investigators. Sherry, you got the rest of the details on that?
Yeah, so what happened was Gabby Petito and her boyfriend, Brian Laundry, set off on a trip. They went from upstate New York and they were going to travel across country in this white van. So they had a fight. They had this argument in front of this grocery store one day, and she slapped him. And the police were called, and she apologized, and she said, listen, it's my fault. I got out of control. I have a little OCD, and this upset me very much what he did. I was afraid he was going to leave me here and take off without me. So I slapped him, and so that no charges were filed. What they did, though, is they told him to go stay at a hotel, and they told her she could stay with the van. Well, a few days later, on August 25th, she spoke to her mother, and that was the last anybody has heard from her. So about 6 days later, he shows up at his house in Florida with the white van, but no Gabby. And his lawyer has told him, do not speak to the police. So the family has gone on, lots and lots of media coverage of the family, trying to plead for any information that people might know about her or might know about him, and also pleading with him to please talk. I just saw this 5 minutes ago. Authorities in Florida are now searching his house.
Yeah.
And his lawyer has come out and said, listen, I know it's really kind of cruel that he's not talking, but it doesn't necessarily mean he's guilty. And he threw out a couple of scenarios. He said maybe she fell off of, you know, a mountain or something and got hurt, and he doesn't want to, you know, talk about it. Or because apparently she's kind of got a YouTube following, he said maybe this is a publicity stunt to get more people on her YouTube channel. You know, so he's throwing out all these bizarre things that, you know, that would be a reason why he may not be talking. But generally speaking, if you're completely innocent, you usually will want to cooperate if you've lost somebody that you love, for gosh sakes, right?
Yeah, and they're very young. She's 22, he's 23. She's very attractive. He's also a very attractive young man. And I mean, because the one piece of advice that I would give anybody when the police come a knocking is don't talk to the police, right? You hear this over and over and over and over again, that you never talk to the police about anything whatsoever. Any time I've ever spoken to a lawyer, it was, did you talk to the police? Did you say anything to the police? Tell me exactly what you said to the police. Mm-hmm. So maybe in this, maybe we're being too reactionary when really he is trying to protect his rights and he's going through all. But in my intuition, Sherry Elliker is telling me that something actually transpired. Because why do you, if she did fall off of a mountain, why does he call no one? If she did want a bigger social media following, why the big charade? Why continue this massive charade? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, yeah, and if he's, you know, engaged to this woman or is dating this woman and loves her, wouldn't it be his only objective to find her and get her back if, in fact, yeah. she is missing? And he's the last person that was with her and saw her. So why wouldn't he be as helpful as possible? Why wouldn't he be leading the charge and trying to make sure that they had every bit of information that they needed to get to her? I mean, wouldn't only a guilty person behave that way? I mean, that's true. We don't know that, right? I mean, it could be anything, but it just seems to me that if you really cared about this person, you would do anything in your power to help. But he's obviously going to be the prime suspect because he's the boyfriend.
So this morning, Cassie Laundrie, she's the sister of Brian Laundrie, told ABC that she hasn't gotten to speak to her brother. Here's what that sounded like this
morning.
Obviously,
me and my family want Gabby to be found safe. She's like a sister, and my children love her. And all I want is for her to come home safe and sound, and this to be just a big misunderstanding. I haven't been able to talk to him. I wish I could talk to him. I've cooperated every way that I can. I wish I had information where I would give more. This is all I have is I gave to the police.
This is what I find so interesting about this, though, Sherry, and you and I talked about this a little bit during the pre-show meeting, but the stories that get elevated to the national level always intrigue me. Dozens of people go missing every day. Hundreds of people die every day, but the stories that get elevated, something, it's like the I don't know, the news gods reach down and they pick a story and they say, you shall be national news. I find it to be fascinating whenever it happens. Just as an example, the day that Michael Brown was shot, there was a story that was kind of percolating in the news cycle before it actually hit national news. Story was out of Louisiana, a young couple, they were a white Christian couple, and they had been murdered by a group of African-American men with a screwdriver. It was some kind of botched hostage situation, kidnapping situation, something like that. And then they had tried to set them on fire. It's a horrific story, right? I would have thought that that would have been national news because it's got the racial element to it. You have this young lovers who are Christians who are on a mission. It has all of the pieces that you would imagine would elevate it to the status of being a national headline. But then what happens is about 4 hours later, after they catch the guys who perpetrated this horrific crime, 4 hours later, Michael Brown is tragically shot and killed by Darren Wilson. And that becomes the story that everybody focuses on. Now, the difference between the two is this. Nobody was tweeting about that story that had happened to that young couple, but everybody was tweeting about Darren Wilson and everybody was tweeting about Michael Brown. So I think that maybe that has a component to it as well, which is what kind of social media surge can you get out of this? Does this have the right elements in social media to actually propel it forward?
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. I think that we don't realize how orchestrated the news coverage is.
Exactly.
And how much research they're doing behind the scenes to find out what's trending, what people are talking about, what's going to get people to come back to the webpage or whatever it is. So yeah, they're always tracking that. And so if, for instance, he hadn't been shot, probably that story would have gotten a lot of coverage and people would have been following it. But the other one trumped it because, you know, more people passed it along and tweeted about it. And there was more traction there.
And now, though, the other thing that's fascinating is if I say Michael Brown, everybody knows the case. Everybody has their own opinions about that case. But if I don't even remember, tragically, that young couple. I mean, I knew it at the time, but now it's like completely gone into the essence. So in a way, we're kind of in this new stage of myth making or storytelling that is way beyond what we could have ever possibly conceived, which is now like random people get to determine what kind of myths we make about the people in our society. Like, we're doing it right now in real time, Sherry Ellicker. That's what's so fascinating. We're trying to tease it apart and did he do it? Did he not do it? It's amazing, amazing to see. Jim Schmidt, stepfather, came forward and he talked to Fox News about how his family is feeling. Here's what that sounded like.
Frustrating is an understatement. I'm just about speechless on this. We all are. It makes no sense to any one of us why he won't come out and speak. He's the one that was traveling with her. They were going across country together. You have information. You're still hiding behind this attorney. We don't understand why. You look at all the social media pages. He describes her as the love of his life, and he's silent. He's silent through all of this. Mm-hmm. But we're not going away. We're not going to stop. The media has been nothing but a huge help for us, reaching out to us on a personal level, and we're not going away, and we're going to keep asking the questions, and we're going to be in the forefront until he starts talking.
Sherry Ellicker, what does your women's intuition tell you about this? What does your spider senses tell you about this as we wrap up this of this story?
Well, you know, I mean, I think it's obvious that he knows more than he's letting on. He's letting on nothing. But you know, I think that this guy is, I don't know, but it seems like he's guilty of something, and certainly he has some knowledge of where she was last. So whether or not it was foul play or an accident or whatever, he needs to come forward and help out as best he can. How about you? What's your spidey sense?
I think we're going to have kind of one of those situations where this is the picture that I paint in my brain. She's supposed to be in the van. He's supposed to be at the hotel. I'm thinking she gets a little lonely. Maybe they text back and forth. Ooh, I miss you. Heart, kissy face. They decide to meet back up again. They say, this is so silly. We gotta continue our trip because we're going to be big YouTube stars. They don't deal with any of their problems. It escalates. It kind of, there's some tension between the two of them. They go somewhere to film something, possibly a high location, maybe near a body of water or something like that. They get into another altercation. I think he did something. I think he got mad. I think he made a mistake. That's what I'm thinking. That's what my spider senses are telling me. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, as far as I know, I mean, this has been so scrutinized, I think we would know by now if he had a criminal past, if he had any case of, you know, any kind of domestic violence in his past. He doesn't seem to have any of that.
Right.
So
right.
Is it a case of, you know, somebody snapping or but I like your scenario. I like the way you kind of had the whole thing drawn out there, you know?
Yeah,
from
you know,
the
I make
emojis
plans.
To
yeah,
everything.
I make plans. I make plans for things, Sherry Ellicker, you know. But what if it's this? What if it's this, though? They're at some high peak, some kind of high lover's peak, and they're hanging out, and they're enjoying it, and they say, oh, I love you so much, and she gets up, and I don't know, who was that guy that made the live record? Leif Garrison? Is that the guy? Is that the guy I'm talking about? You know, ooh, baby, I love you way, that song.
Oh, well, that's Peter Frampton.
Peter Frampton. Brady Bones, pull up Peter Frampton for me really quick. So Peter Frampton is playing in the background. They're smoking doobs. They're on some high peak somewhere.
Wow.
And she's dancing around to Peter Frampton as it's playing in the background. And they're laughing and giggling and having a good time. All of a sudden, she doesn't know where she is. Precipice is right there. She's right on the edge. She does a little bit of a spin, and then big bada boom, she falls thousands of feet, hundreds of feet to her death. He panics because the police were just there around them, 48 hours previous? And so he says, man, I got to get home, and I got to talk to my lawyer, because otherwise this is going to look like I actually murdered her when I actually didn't. That's the other scenario that you got, Sherry Ellicker.
Okay, I think that's a vivid picture. It's a lovely story, and you tell it so well.
Thank you.
I think it's anything is possible. But I think now one of the things that drives the media as well is the ability for them to get to the family members. So if the family members are willing to talk, and these people are, then it puts this tremendous pressure on the local authorities to make an arrest. So I think we're going to see action on this sooner than later. Depending on what they find at his house and depending on, you know, what he is finally willing to talk about. But maybe it's true. Maybe Peter Frampton was, you know, a part of this. You never know.
And she's just dancing on a capri. She's just dancing, and she's saying, "Oh, Brian, I love you so much. I can't wait to spend the rest of my life with you." And then she slips and she falls. And what if he actually tried to save her life? What if he actually tried to help her? And we have this whole thing backwards, Sherry Elliker. Come on, I'm a genius.
What if it is that she's still alive? Wouldn't that be great? I mean,
even better.
If the poor woman is actually still out there. That would be the very best outcome of all. If this is some sort of a hoax or a publicity stunt, which I don't think it is, but I mean, that would be. Can you imagine how mad her family would be, though, at her? Ugh.
Yeah, I sincerely hope that she is still alive, though. In my heart of hearts, as somebody who works in the news cycle every single day, my hope is always that the person is found and they are found well. Because with so much bad news out there, if this turned out to be a hoax, I'd be okay with it. If it turned out to be some big YouTube joke, I'd say, let them go be young kids out there and enjoy the rest of their lives. People are doing crazier stuff on TikTok. Look at what they're doing on TikTok. It's madness out there.
Yeah.
Taylor, what do you think about my hypothesis as to what happened?
I'm going to disagree with you on a little bit. Some of it, actually. I think it gives me Chris Watts vibes.
You're right. Yeah, that's a whole nother ball of worms to get into.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my thoughts on that one.
I think it's ball of wax and can of worms, Jack.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Jacob. Producer Jacob, coming in again to save the show. I appreciate it, buddy. All right, so the FDA has decided in their wisdom to reject a plan to administer Pfizer's COVID booster doses. Sherry Elliker, you got the deets on this. You got all the details.
Right. So they met today, and people were kind of curious whether or not they would agree with Joe Biden's, he wanted September 20th to be when we would roll out booster shots for pretty much everyone, and at least for the Pfizer vaccine, because that had been approved. At least the dose or the vaccine itself had been developed, the booster shot had, but they were waiting to see what this FDA panel came up with.
Right.
And what they decided was that if you are 65 or older, and if you have a high risk case, so for instance, if you've got something where you're immunocompromised, then yes, a third shot is probably something that you want to do. However, as far as the rest of the population goes, no booster. They don't think that there's enough data to make a recommendation. They're a little bit concerned about something called myocarditis, which is, an inflammation or can lead to an inflammation around the heart, which has been shown in some young men. So they're concerned about that. Now, in Israel, they have a different approach. The Israelis have given the third shot. They find that that has increased the protection about 95%. It gets it back up to about 95% after the third dose. But the FDA said no. They don't think the data is not supporting that right now. And so if you aren't 65, you're not going to be getting that third dose.
So last week, I am prepping for Cairo Nights. I'm trying to pull stories together, and I'm having my very good friend, Dr. Z, on, and we're going to talk about whether or not boosters should be a thing or not. And I end up, I think it was at CNN, it might have been MSNBC, but they had this, should I get a booster shot regardless of what the FDA says, effectively. And so what it was like a little animation of a guy. And he is going through his life of this pandemic that we have. And he's wearing a mask and he's walking by other people. And little text pops up and it says, "You made the right decision to go out and get vaccinated, but you're not sure that you're totally protected. And you've got questions." And I thought, this is so cringy. And then they cut to him walking past a generic, this character, white guy, brown hair, brown eyes. He's walking past a pharmacy, and then the little text pops back up again, and it goes, "And you're considering getting the third shot of whatever vaccine you're going to get." And then it says, "Don't let bureaucrats or the complicated bureaucratic process get in the way of what's best for your health." And I thought, that is the kind of thing that is going to make anti-vaxxers blow a gasket, where they're being told that the FDA and the CDC are the end-all be-all when it comes to what we should and should not do. And then on one of the – again, I couldn't find it. I don't remember if it's CNN or MSNBC. They have this animation which is – basically treating you like you're an adult child, saying, don't listen to the CDC, don't listen to the FDA, you know what's best for your health. That's the kind of thing I think that gets under people's skin and makes them even more averse to getting the vaccine. That kind of confusion, I see it all the time. Fauci said this 6 months ago, now he says this. Fauci's a liar. Fauci said they weren't doing gain of function research, turns out they were. Fauci's a liar, he's a hack, he can't be trusted. I see it all over the place. The truth begins to mingle with the fiction, and then they get lost in this idea of, I will never get the vaccine, you will never give it to me, and it doesn't matter if it's approved or booster shots or whatever it is, no dice, I'm done with it.
Well, do you think it's fiction or do you think it's ignorance? Because I believe that it's more ignorance than it is fiction. I know that there is, I'm not sure if Fauci was, if we can attribute this to him, but, you know, there's something called a noble truth, right, where you exaggerate something or you talk about something for the greater good. It may not be entirely true, but you say it, so it makes people motivated to do something that would be for the greater good. So that part, yes, there might be a little bit of embellishment or things like that going on. I think that the sad truth is, Jack, that they just don't know. They clearly just don't know enough, and that they are, you know, under the demands of the media and the public, and we're in the middle of this and there's a crisis going on and they're throwing everything they can at it, and they don't know. I mean, that's why you get differing opinions. That's why you get this. I mean, as of a couple of months ago, September 20th was going to be the day we're all lining up to get our booster shots. Now they're saying no. So is that because they were lying to us, or is that because Biden jumped the gun, or is it all of the above, or is it just that they just don't have enough information? This thing is crazy. It's evolving, and it's really scary. And I don't know that we can trust them. I don't think we can trust them, not because they are necessarily evil, but because there's just not enough information out there.
Sure, yeah. I can see that point, Sherry Elliker. How do you feel about this story that's coming out of Arkansas saying that hospital staff must swear off Tylenol and if they're going to get a religious vaccine exemption? No Tylenol, no Tums, no Preparation H, none of that. You can't have any of it. This is from the Conway Regional Health System. They noticed an unusual uptick in exemption requests, and then they said, okay, well, if you're going to do this religious exemption, then you got to prove, or at least Scout's Honor, swear off Tylenol, Tums, and Preparation H for the rest of your life, I guess.
Yeah, so what this is about is there's religious exemptions that people are claiming because of something called fetal cell lines, and fetal cell lines are their tissue from aborted fetuses, usually back in the 70s and the 80s, and thousands of drugs, lots and lots of drugs, are taken from these fetal cell lines, and a lot of them are it's not the original fetal tissue, obviously.
Right.
It's cell lines that have been developed from something from years and years and years ago. So there's all kinds of medications that are developed from this. And what they're saying is, look, if that's your reason, and that's why you say you can't take the vaccine because you disagree with using fetal cell lines, then by the way, you can also not use Tylenol, Pepto-Bismol, aspirin, Tums, X-Lax, Preparation H. The list goes on and on. And they're making you kind of swear that you're not going to do that. Is this enforceable? Probably never, but that's what they're trying to prove a point. And they're also saying that they want people to be educated about these fetal cell lines, that people understand, you know, that it's a very common practice.
Yeah, I had actually heard that it comes from, there's conflicting things about this. I had heard that those fetal cell lines are replicated from one fetus that was aborted in Norway back in 1970. And that one fetus was able to produce enough material so that they could replicate the cell lines over and over and over again. We've been using the same, but it's not the actual fetal material, as you said. So I don't really see why people would want to have an exemption from that if it's something that's not even the original baby. Do you know what I mean? Like, would you? How would you? It's
right,
like so many parts removed.
Yeah, I don't know that people. It is a little confusing. I didn't understand that either, and so I think people are just now realizing that it's not that it's actual tissue. It's that something that was developed, you know, thousands and thousands of generations removed from it.
Right.
So they want people to understand that this is a very common practice, and chances are, if you're really opposed to it, you've already taken medications that have done that.
Speaking of, Tracy Taylor, are you a Tylenol, Pepto-Bismol, aspirin, Tums kind of gal, or not so much?
Not so much, actually. No. Not all at one time, at least.
Not Lipitor, not Cenacote, not Motrin, no. Maybe ibuprofen?
I do ibuprofen on occasion, Excedrin for my migraines on occasion. But,
Yeah. Yeah. So you like to party then? You like to go deep?
Yeah, as old as I am, I don't do that anymore. Not with four dogs and a teenager. I'm out.
You know, Sherry, I've known you for a long time, but one of the things I've never asked you is how do you feel about bicycle helmets? I mean, it just never came up. Now, I know that most people talk about that kind of stuff all the time. I know how Brady Bones feels about it. He hates them. He burns them anytime they get near him. He actually gathers them and throws them into a huge pile and burns them because he hates them so much. Jacob, on the other hand, loves bicycle helmets. He owns a collection of 400 of them. Ooh. So it's an amazing feat as well. But Sherry, how do you feel about bicycle helmets?
I would say I think they're really important. I think that people should wear one because we want to protect our heads, don't we? I mean, I think that it's kind of a necessary thing. If you're going to ride a bike, why not put on a helmet?
So King County is moving towards repealing the bicycle helmet law. The discussion follows reporting from Crosscut and others showing enforcement inequitability. Is that the word we're going to use now? Inequitability? How do I conjugate this?
I don't know.
Sherry,
it's a real ball of worms, that word.
Oh, you're fired.
Well, I think that they said it's a the laws have a disproportionate use against people of color.
Yeah, but this word is going to get stuck in my mind. I'm going to obsess over this.
So I'm sorry. What is the word now?
Inequitability. Jacob, you can see this.
Inequitability, maybe. Is that what it is?
Inequitability?
This is madness. This is how woke it's become.
Sound it out.
Inequitability.
Inequitability.
But it doesn't make
any
sense.
So it's not equitable, it's inequitable. And it's the inequitability of it that is a problem.
Okay, this is how woke we've all become. Yeah, no, it makes sense. But I just feel like we're making new words. Because it used to be it was either equitable or not equitable, right? It used to be
inequitably. Is that what you were saying?
It's not inequitably. Yes,
oh,
there we go. Inequitably.
Inequitably.
We're all college-educated people, and this is how ridiculous the language has gotten in our society. Targeted people for experiencing homelessness. So what they're basically saying is that if you're homeless and you wear, do the cops even cut people tickets who are homeless for anything at all, let alone helmets? I think that's the lowest thing on the list, right?
Well, I mean, I can't imagine that they would be targeting homeless people because they're not wearing a bicycle helmet. I mean, but that's what they're saying is they're saying that they found that there are more people of color and that people that are experiencing homelessness seem to be getting tickets at a higher rate. And so this law was developed back in the 90s when people didn't even use bicycle helmets. So back then it was a very necessary law. Well, now everybody knows you should wear a helmet. But if they're not able to afford one, or you know, there's another reason that they think that they put the certain people at a disadvantage because they get a ticket and they can't afford to pay the ticket as well.
Is this kind of like it's a too poor to be safe kind of thing? You know, like
right.
We wouldn't say this for anything else. Never, not once would we say like, oh, well, you know, your seatbelts, you know, some drug addict cut them out and try to make a belt with them, and looks like you're too poor to be safe. I mean, you know, you're living in your car, you're vehiculate homeless, and so you don't have any seatbelts, so we're not going to. It would never. This would never fly in any other way. So I'm wondering if this is just like a. Oh, look at how aware of the needs of these people are that we're willing to allow them to die from a horrific brain hemorrhage instead of asking them to wear a helmet. This is really unnecessary and egregious, and I won't stand for it, Sherry Ellicker.
Well,
I won't stand for it.
I'll say this, that head injuries and fatalities have decreased 20%. That's huge, I think, since they enacted the law. And even bicyclists are now saying that it really shouldn't be a matter of law, but there should be other options, like providing free helmets for people, and, you know, trying to let people know that, you know, this is not something that should be policed. This should be something that should be, I guess, you know, a matter of choice.
Be a donation opportunity for Jacob so he can donate all those helmets that he
all
has
of
in
his
apartment.
Helmets. Yeah, before Brady burns them.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, why do I gotta burn stuff?
I don't know. I was just improvising. But everybody knows that Jacob has 400 bicycle helmets in his one-room studio apartment in Seattle.
Really inefficient use of space there.
Speaking of, Tracy Taylor, bicycle helmets, are you for them or against them?
Oh, I always believe in them. Yeah, just because I think I'm a sure test to not wearing a helmet as a kid and having a lot of problems. So does that make
sense?
Yeah. Okay.